Good afternoon. Welcome. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. A little later in the show, I'll speak with Governor Wes Moore about the latest developments in the efforts to clear debris and recover the remains of the four workers who are presumed to be buried amid the wreckage in the Patapsco River following the crash on the Key Bridge. But we begin today with another installment in our series of conversations with the candidates. My guest is former delegate Neil Parrott, a Republican who served in the General Assembly for 12 years and who has twice been the GOP nominee for the House of Representatives in the 6th Congressional District. He is one of seven candidates in this year's GOP primary for that seat, in a field that includes Dan Cox, the Republican candidate for governor in 2022. The landscape in the 6th District has changed considerably since the last two times Delegate Parrott ran. His opponent in those years was Representative David Trone, a wealthy self-funded candidate. Trone is leaving the House after three terms to run for the Senate. He's in a tight primary race with Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks. David Trone won the two elections in which he faced off against Neil Parrott by comfortable margins, but with Trone out of the race this year, it is expected to be a highly competitive general election contest. There are 16 candidates vying to be the Democratic nominee in the 6th District. District 6 is in the northwest part of our state. It includes all of Garrett, Allegheny, Frederick, and Washington counties, as well as part of Montgomery County. Delegate Parrott first represented District 2B and then District 2A in the Maryland House of Delegates from 2011 through 2023. And before being elected to the General Assembly, he was a traffic engineer at the Maryland State Highway Administration. Neil Parrott holds a B.S. degree in civil engineering from the University of Maryland and an MBA from Mount St. Mary's University. He is 53 years old. He lives in Hagerstown. He and his wife, April, are the parents of three children. You are welcome to join our conversation with former Delegate Neil Parrott. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. You can email us, midday@wypr.org. Neil Parrott joins us today on Zoom from Hagerstown. Former Delegate Parrott, welcome.
Great to be with you this afternoon. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Yes, thanks for your time. So you have a transportation background. Your thoughts on the tragedy at the Key Bridge happened just a week ago.
Well, you're right. I do. I have my own business, Traffic Solutions Incorporated, and have been doing that for a long time. I was a city engineer at the City of Frederick. The actual name was Deputy Director of Public Works for Engineering, but essentially a city engineer. And so I definitely have some thoughts. I mean, it's a tragedy what happened at the FSK Bridge. I have to say the response from the president and from our governor has been positive. Immediately, they're trying to clear the channel, which needs to happen right away so that the Baltimore Harbor, the port there, people can get back to work and we can get freight going again. It's critical for our region and for these jobs for that to be opened. And I'm thankful to see such a high effort towards doing that. Also, when you look at the bridge collapse itself, you know, we could always, now that in hindsight, see some things that could have done differently. Could the tugboats have taken them out further? Could the bridge have been upgraded to have dolphins, which would have been protective fenders around the concrete islands? That would have been helpful. It's interesting. There's a railroad bridge right next to the FSK bridge close by, and it has the dolphins, but it was because it was constructed more recently than the FSK bridge was. So maybe that's something that should have been looked at when they had the new ships that are going through the deeper Panama Canal, and they did the dredging and they did check for safety. However, this would have been one thing that would have been helpful in this situation. But again, hindsight's 20/20. I don't see how anyone would have seen that in advance.
Yeah, of course. Of course, that bridge, the construction was completed back in 1977, and the ships that were going through the port in those days were not nearly as big as the Dali, the cargo ship that ran into the bridge last week. In terms of the traffic, the vehicular traffic that is now going to be routed through the harbor tunnel, the two tunnels in the, you know, in South Baltimore, what's your take? I mean, there's going to be estimates of, you know, some 30,000 more cars going through those tunnels than there used to be when the Francis Scott Key Bridge was usable. What's your take on how that particular dilemma of traffic in those tunnels, and for that matter, traffic on the rest of the Beltway now that people have to drive the full circumference to get around.
Well, that's the big problem, really, is the time that people used to save by going over the bridge and hazardous materials on trucks that were able to use the bridge. Now they're going to have a much longer route. It's going to take a lot longer. As far as the traffic itself goes, the Fort McHenry Tunnel has about 120,000 vehicles per day, and the Baltimore Beltway has 180,000 vehicles per day, and the Harbor Tunnel is 75,000. But out of all those three, by far the fewest cars was on this bridge, the FSK bridge, which was 35,000 vehicles per day. So spreading those out among those other three options, that the Beltway or the two tunnels, thankfully there's enough capacity to handle that. You're going to see a little bit more delays, but not noticeable.
And when it comes to running for Congress, this is something you've obviously tried a couple of other times. You got your name on the ballot in this year's primary on the very last day that you were eligible to do that. What strikes you as being different about the 2024 primary than the two previous general elections in which you were the nominee?
Well, in your introduction, you said it well. It's an open seat. So the person I ran against before, David Trone, had the advantage of being an incumbent in both elections. He also had pretty much unlimited funds. So I spent $1.1 million 2 years ago, and he spent about $13 million total for that race, most of it his own money. So that's not going to be the case. This time it's going to be much more even when we look at the money spent. And you did mention we signed up on the last day, February 9th. And, I had a lot of prayer going into this and a lot of talking to people. I did the due diligence. We did a poll. And I was looking at the existing candidates on the Republican side. And if I didn't join, it looked to me like Dan Cox was probably going to win the primary. But I was very concerned that he wouldn't be able to win the general just based on his reputation as he ran for governor 2 years ago. You know, he was fighting with Larry Hogan the whole time. He continues to fight with Larry Hogan, even though they're in different races this time. So seeing that, you know, I fought really, really hard to make this seat competitive. I sued the state of Maryland. Judicial Watch serves as the attorneys. We won that lawsuit. As a result, the congressional districts all around the state of Maryland had to change. If it didn't change, Andy Harris on the Eastern Shore, he may have lost. He would have had a very competitive election this last time, but he was safe because of the lawsuit that won. And District 6, where we are running in Western Maryland, was not going to be competitive. But now you can see it's very competitive. Like you said, we have 7 people on the Republican ballot, and I think 14 on the Democrat side. And that's because everyone knows this seat is up for grabs. In your introduction, you talked about how this is going to be one of the most competitive races in the country. I believe it is. And I believe this is our time when we can win this seat and get representation back for Western Maryland and Northern Montgomery County to be more representative of really what the people in this area think.
Former Delegate Neil Parrott is a candidate to fill this open seat in the 6th District Congressional District. 410-662-8780 is our number here at Midday, our email midday@wypr.org. So let me ask you to situate yourself in today's Republican Party. You supported President Trump's re-election back in 2020. Do you support President Trump now in 2024?
So I stayed neutral in the primaries to see how that played out. Obviously, President Trump has won that primary, and now I'm completely supporting President Trump running for president. Look, when you look at President Trump and his policies versus President Biden and his policies, there's a stark contrast, a huge difference, and a huge difference on how it's affecting everyday Americans. I think when President Trump was there, we saw the economy booming. We saw people getting jobs, people getting houses. What we're seeing now is an economy that's in shambles. We've seen inflation that hasn't been this high since Jimmy Carter was in office, the late 70s. In order to have the same cost of living as just 3 years ago when Biden took office, you have to have almost $11,500 more dollars just to have the same standard of living as before. But most people didn't get an $11,500 raise in the last 3 years. So they've taken a pay cut. We're worse off now than we were 3 years ago. These things have to change. We have to get back on track. And unfortunately, President Biden, his vision to move forward is a vision of higher taxes, more spending. He's proposed having higher business taxes than both Russia and China. And it's been said that our businesses are what gives us the jobs. If you kill the golden goose, then you don't have any golden eggs. But unfortunately, that's the direction that President Biden wants to take us, a direction that hurts everyday Americans, costs us jobs, and hurts our economy.
Mr. Trump perpetuates the falsehood that the election was rigged and that Mr. Biden is not the legitimately elected president of the United States. Do you agree with Mr. Trump in that regard?
Well, I think President Biden clearly is the president. He has been for the last 3 years. And I think, certainly you can always try to make elections more secure. I tried to do that when I was in Annapolis as a delegate. I like the idea of voter ID. I introduced that bill several times. I like the idea of signature verification, where when you're voting by mail or even in person, that we could verify that signature is actually that person. I like the idea that when people go to register to vote, that they are U.S. citizens. And I put bills for all three of those issues in the General Assembly in Annapolis. They didn't pass, but I think they create a good discussion. So I think we need to watch our elections. We need to make sure that they are secure, that make sure that they're fair. But clearly, right now, President Biden is the president. There was not enough proof that was offered that would suggest otherwise. And I'm very thankful for voter integrity groups that are coming together to try and make sure our elections are secure moving forward.
When it comes to integrity, does character matter when it comes to voters making decisions about candidates for public office? Should voters consider your character, the fact that you are a father, the fact that you have a small business, the fact that you're a coach, the fact that, you're involved in your church, you're involved in your community? Are those things, should they be important to voters? And what about Mr. Trump's character? He's been indicted 88 times in four different states. And there's a lot of evidence to show that Mr. Trump has acted nefariously and illegally throughout his business career and even during his time in the White House.
Well, I think character certainly matters. It should matter more in elections as we move forward. And, as far as President Trump's character, his policies are what I looked at. He really had some great policies when he was there. A lot of these indictments, those are just accusations. Those aren't proving anything yet. He hasn't been proven guilty on any of those 88, as far as I know. So I think we'll just have to wait and see what plays out there. The fact is, we're going to have a new president. We're having a presidential election. It will either be President Trump or President Biden. And President Biden right now, when we look at his character, when we look at Hunter Biden, when we look at the elections, I do look at suppression of information in the last election. Like, that laptop was real. And yet a lot of people were saying, oh, it's false information for Russia. Like, we know for sure, without a doubt, that was real. The FBI sat on it, didn't get that information out. Social media shushed it down. There are some real concerns with whether President Biden has used Hunter Biden, who's taken an exorbitant paycheck when he doesn't have the skills to earn that paycheck. Really, it seems to be just connections. And what did he get for that? So I see some real questions on ethics and on character on the Biden's team. But the fact is, it's going to be President Trump or Biden that's going to be our president 2 years from now, unless something drastic happens before the election.
Yeah, of course, Republicans in the House currently have been, holding hearings with the intention of impeaching Mr. Biden. Do you support efforts to impeach Mr. Biden, as well as Secretary Mayorkas, who is the Secretary of DHS handles immigration policy for the administration?
Well, Secretary Mayorkas, let me talk to that one first. He has let us down, and that's a mild way of saying that he has gone against the U.S. Constitution, where he needed to come in and enforce the laws of this country, and his job was the border. He has failed miserably, and I don't think he even tried. We have a border now, just the last 3 years since Biden has been president, where more people have crossed that border than the entire population of the state of Maryland. Just think about it. Every person that the whole state of Maryland's population has crossed into our country from Mexico, the southern border, just since President Biden has been president. That's completely unacceptable. We can't handle it socially. Look at New York, Chicago, these countries, they're all saying we can't handle this. These cities, they need more resources, but it's not more resources. What we need to do is enforce and close that border. We see fentanyl that's coming freely across that border. And in just Maryland alone, in 1 year, killed more than 2,000 Marylanders. That's the fentanyl that's coming across the border. We see human trafficking exploding in our country as a large part as a result of that open border. I mean, basically, criminal activities. We're seeing people who have come across that are very violent criminals and have not been deported from our country, even when they've committed crimes here. We've seen disastrous results. We've seen...
And how about the bill that was crafted over many months of negotiations by Senator Lankford from Oklahoma, who came up with what many consider to be one of the strongest immigration and border security bills in the last 30 years, which is now stalled in the House of Representatives because Mr. Speaker Johnson won't bring it to the floor. Do you support Senator Lankford's negotiated bill that has support in the Senate?
So I certainly respect Senator Lankford a lot. I've met him in person. But that bill that he proposed allowed 5,000 illegal aliens to cross per day. And that's completely unacceptable. Not 5,000 per day. We need zero. We need to close the border. There should be no illegal aliens entering our country. We need to make sure that people who come in are coming in legally. So that bill was flawed from the very beginning. I'm glad that it's not passing.
And what is the solution then? There's a bill in the House called HB2. Do you think that is the full and complete answer?
I think HB2 has a lot of positive elements in it. I think what needs to happen, though, unfortunately, it's not going to pass right now. And it seems like there's just an impasse. And so what we need to have happen is for the next Congress, the next U.S. Senate, the next president to come together and make sure that we enforce our border. I mean, it's really not that hard. We have existing laws that are just completely being ignored. The send back to Mexico policy should be re-implemented. There are a lot of things that the president could do, and that's why I believe we need one reason why I believe we need to have President Trump back in office so that we can actually enforce our border, know that it's a huge priority, get people who will take it as a priority, and then we could start talking in Congress on different ways to deal with the illegal aliens that are here, and then also what our policy is going to be moving forward. Look, I want to see more people being able to come into the United States, the best and brightest from around the country, around the world. But we can't have like birth, where you have a birth here, citizenship given for that. That just doesn't make sense. No other country that I know of in the world has that. And that shouldn't be the case.
So immigration should be offered to people on some sort of merit-based criteria? Is that what you're...
Purporting. I do. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And with Mr. Trump closing the border, that is a policy that a lot of people say is very difficult to, number one, enforce, and number two, very difficult to do without compromising the free movement of people who are perfectly allowed to cross the border.
Well, there are plenty of legal places where people cross the border every single day. Those will stay open. So I don't see a difficulty in actually getting in and out of the country. We just need to do it through the actual checkpoints that we have. We have bridges. I've crossed the border several times. I actually had my grandparents lived in Texas, southern Texas, and my cousins in San Antonio. So, I mean, I've been to the border. It's not hard to go across and come back. You just need to make sure that you have the right paperwork, which... You know, if you're illegal, you're not going to have the right paperwork.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and talk about more issues as well in the 6th District congressional seat that is now open. Delegate Neil Parrott is my guest. He is one of the candidates, one of 7 GOP candidates to in the primary on May 14th to be the Republican nominee in the 6th congressional district. Our number 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
Mm-hmm. This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, my guest is Debbie Hines, a former prosecutor and defense attorney who has written a book called Get Off My Neck, Black Lives, White Justice, and a Former Prosecutor's Quest for Reform. It's an important contribution to the conversation about criminal justice reform and a clarion call to changing the paradigm for local prosecutors. So that's on the way tomorrow. If you've just joined us today, we're continuing our series of conversations with the candidates with Delegate Neil Parrott, who's running in the Republican primary for Congress to represent the 6th District. That district is currently represented by Representative David Trone, who is running for Senate in the May primary against Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks. The 6th District includes all of Garrett, Allegheny, Frederick, and Washington counties, as well as a portion of Montgomery County. The 7 Republicans on the ballot in the GOP primary include, in addition to former Delegate Parrott, former Delegate Dan Cox, the Republican nominee for governor, who lost by a wide margin to Wes Moore in 2022. You are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. So, Delegate Parrott, almost all of the Republican candidates for president in the primary before they dropped out raised their hand when asked if they would support pardons for the rioters who stormed the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Do you agree with that stance? If you had been on that stage, would your hand have gone up as well?
Well, I think it's important to look at the actual incident and what actually happened and who we're talking about. Unfortunately, what we've seen is a double standard of justice where many people were arrested on January 6th who really didn't do much. When you actually look at the evidence against them, like they went in the building, but it seems like they're almost invited in, if I'm seeing what I'm seeing properly, as opposed to Black Lives Matter, where they flipped over police cars, they burned down CVSs. I mean, and then hardly any of them got prosecuted for anything. Even in the city of Baltimore, a group of Black Lives Matter protesters threw the Columbus statue into the Baltimore Harbor.
But people stormed the Capitol to try to stop the certification of the election. Do you think that doing that should go unaccounted for? I mean, Mr. Trump encouraged people to stop the counting of the Electoral College votes. He was not successful. But do you not think of this as a very serious threat to the democratic process?
Well, I certainly think burning CVS is horrible. People shouldn't be prosecuted for that. We need to have a standard of justice that's equal. Now, when we look at January 6th, you know, I considered going there that day. Many people asked me if I would go. I talked with my wife about it. We decided not to go. We didn't see a benefit to going to D.C. on that day. You know, everything was pretty much decided that they were going to do what they were going to do. You know, I would differ in the opinion that he asked people to go stop the proceedings. I watched part of the speech. I didn't see that. And when you say storming the Capitol, yes, and that's why I said it depends. I mean, some people actually really did violate the law and they need to be prosecuted, and some did not. I didn't see hundreds of thousands of people storming the Capitol as you're describing. Some did, and they should be prosecuted.
When it comes to electability, you mentioned you had concerns that Dan Cox, who did not do well in a statewide race against the current governor, Governor Moore, who, by the way, will be joining us in 15 minutes or so to talk about the Key Bridge incident. But when it comes to electability, where do you stand, in the political panoply compared to Mr. Cox? I mean, would you call yourself more moderate than Mr. Cox? The same. He is thought to be a very right-wing member of the Republican Party and a very ardent supporter of Mr. Trump.
So to that, I would just say that when people vote for me, they're voting for someone who's reasonable, someone who works well with other people. I have a record of working well with other people, 12 years as a delegate. I'm an engineer. I like to solve problems. And I think that's the kind of leader that we need moving forward.
Is if Mr. Trump, for example, is in fact convicted of some of the crimes for which he's been accused of, if he's convicted prior to the 5th of November in the election, should he be disallowed from serving as president?
Well, certainly that's a hypothetical question. I don't know what the I guess I can't answer it because I don't know like what the circumstance would be. Who was the judge? What was he accused of? What is he found guilty of? Is he going to appeal? I mean, I don't have any of those details to be able to say that.
So for the seven people who are running for in the primary for the sixth congressional nomination to be the nominee, what do you think distinguishes you? What should voters know about you that is different than the other six?
I think one of the big things is that I have experience. I'm looking at, we need to change things in our country right away. We need to work with people. Whoever goes down to D.C. is going to have to immediately work with people to make changes. And I don't think we're going to have very long. I actually think President Trump will probably win this coming year. I believe that the Republicans will take the U.S. Senate. Of course, Maryland is in big play in that Senate. Who's going to take control of the Senate? But I think even without Maryland to play, I think the Republicans were already going to take the Senate. And I think we're going to have greater numbers in the House. But that may only last for 2 years. When this occurred before, the House and President Trump, they were kind of at odds, and they let things just slide. And it kept sliding for 2 years. One thing that I have is 12 years as a Maryland state delegate, working well with others, taking action when action is needed. You know, I got things on the ballot that using the referendum process that had not happened in over 20 years in the state of Maryland, but I did it three times. Of course, a lot of Marylanders all across the state really helped to make those happen. You know, so I have the experience to make efforts right away to bring forward things that are going to change America's lives for the better and to make sure we don't sit on it, but we wait right away. And one of those is the border. We have to close the border immediately. We have to try and work together to make sure we have common sense policies that will help our country.
Talk about the needs of the 6th District in particular. What do you think is top of mind for your constituents in that district? I mean, we talked about immigration. Do you think immigration on the southern border is something that is, a top priority for Western Maryland?
Well, you know, it's Northern Montgomery County, Frederick, and all of Garrett, Allegheny, and Washington. And you know, Montgomery County has been affected greatly by illegal aliens. You know, just the two-year-old that was killed just a few months ago. It's so sad in Montgomery County. What we see is the county executive, Elrich, who's changed his policies. Now he's going to work with ICE, where before they called it a sanctuary county, where they weren't working with ICE at all. Thankfully, his eyes were opened. But we need to make sure they don't get in the country to begin with, that we enforce our borders. That would help Montgomery County. It'd help to bring the crime rate back down. But also we look at other issues like I-270. There's a roadway that needs to be widened. It needed to be widened 20 years ago when I worked for the State Highway Administration. It needs to be widened more today. There was a plan to get that project moving forward with Governor Hogan. And actually, tax dollars were not going to pay for it. It was just going to be the new lanes would be tolled. Virginia has had a huge amount of success with that. That would have been a great program to have here in Maryland. Unfortunately, with just about a month to go, where he needed one more month, Governor Hogan could have this under contract and moving forward, but he ran out of time. And now Governor Moore has shut down the entire program of widening I-270, widening I-495, and fixing the bridge, the American Legion Bridge. Those projects must happen. I-81 in Washington County, it's a safety hazard, and we need to widen that from 4 lanes to 6 lanes, all the way to the Pennsylvania county line. And as you go further west, we're looking at US 219. It needs to be widened, a small section of Maryland and also in Pennsylvania, which would connect two major interstates. So these north-south routes need to be improved, and I would have the expertise to know what needs to happen and also to help make it happen when I go down to DC and to work with Maryland, because it's obviously not just going to be a national solution. We need to work with the state and Governor Westmore to make these projects move forward.
Let's talk a little bit about healthcare, particularly reproductive healthcare. There are those who support a 6-week or a 15-week federal ban on abortions. Would you agree with those proposals?
So when I go to D.C., that is not going to be my focus. Roe v. Wade, I believe that was a terrible decision. It was overreached by the United States Supreme Court. Those decisions used to be made at the state level. The Dobbs decision overturns, of course, Roe v. Wade, and it sends those decisions back to the state level. I think that's, for the very most part, that's where they need to be, staying at the state level. In Maryland, the Dobbs decision had no effect at all. Abortions could be performed right up until birth into Maryland. Leroy Carhart, he has had a practice since 1992 in Montgomery County, where he performs abortions right up until birth. There's actually on the ballot this year, so people who are listening, you'll be able to vote if you want to take the current law where you can have abortions in Maryland all the way up to 9 months and keep that and make it enshrined in the Maryland state constitution or not. We really don't need this amendment if you support the current law, because it is the current law. I'm opposed to that amendment. I think if people want to learn more about it, they can go to healthnotharmmd.org. That's healthnotharmmd.org. But, you know, that's everyone's choice. I encourage whoever's listening, look into that amendment for the Maryland Constitution. If you agree, vote yes. If you disagree, vote no. But when I go to D.C., that's not going to be my focus. You know, truly outrageous things should be outlawed, like partial birth abortion was a couple decades ago in D.C. If something like that were to come up, I would vote.
But, Delegate, with all due respect, to say that there are people performing abortions right up to birth, 9 months into a pregnancy, is simply not accurate. It's just not true. It's not happening. And the proposals are something that you would have to vote on, whether or not you're going to make it your focus or not. But to be under the impression that people are performing abortions right up to the point of birth, I think is an ill-informed impression. So the actual proposals are for either a 15-week federal ban on abortion. Others have proposed a 6-week ban. There are certain states that have done it that way. So those are the actual proposals that are out there that a person who's elected to Congress would have to vote on. So it's just, that's why I was asking you about those particular specific proposals.
Yes, no, I would have to disagree. I mean, abortions are happening up until right next to birth. Leroy Carhart is doing those. He actually had one patient from New York that came to Maryland to get a super late term abortion, who it was a botched abortion. It went wrong. She ended up passing away as a result of that. It's because it's a risky procedure. So unfortunately, that is what is happening. I'm sure it's probably rare, but it is happening in the state of Maryland. And
Let me ask you about economic development issues in Western Maryland. As a member of Congress, what is the capacity of the federal government to improve economic development and the economic standing of the counties in Western Maryland that you would be representing?
Well, certainly when President Trump was president, he had a program that allowed certain cities to apply and get approved as basically zones, improvement zones, where they would have less taxes, and that would allow more investment in those cities. And that was a very positive thing. I think those types of things could continue and be very, very helpful for cities in Western Maryland, like Cumberland, like Hagerstown.
This is about 10 years ago, when you were in the Maryland legislature, you introduced a bill saying that individual jurisdictions should set minimum wage rates. Do you support, what is your position on a federal minimum wage increase?
Well, you're right. My position was to, and I worked with Ike Leggett. He supported that. Also the Senate president at the time, Mike Miller. I was hoping that we might be able to get a county choice minimum wage in the state of Maryland, which would have been a huge help for depressed areas in the state like Garrett County, Allegheny County. They're trying to compete with West Virginia and Pennsylvania, where they don't have nearly the same minimum wage that Maryland does. And it's taking a lot of our jobs and displacing them to other states. I mean, it's really been hurtful to Western Maryland in particular. That's why I wanted to see a county choice. Now, I think using the same logic, that state choice minimum wage really is the way to go. Different states are choosing different minimum wage laws, and some are sticking with the federal minimum wage at $7.25 an hour. I think that's appropriate. Each state should be able to decide how they'd like to handle this.
How about term limits? Do you support them for people in the legislative branch of government?
I do. I won't term limit myself. However, I do think 12 years is a reasonable time frame. I would completely support a bill or an amendment to the U.S. Constitution to say that 12 years maximum would be what someone can serve in the legislature for our country.
Delegate Neil Parrott is running in the Republican primary in the 6th Congressional District. Delegate Parrott, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate the interview. You asked some great questions.
All right. Well, thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your day. You can hear all of our conversations with the candidates when you go to our website, wipr.org/midday, and when you subscribe to our podcast. Our series continues next week. On Tuesday, I'll speak with April Delaney. She's a Democrat, also running in the 6th Congressional District primary. And coming up next, Governor Wes Moore joins me with the latest on the reclamation and recovery efforts at the site of the collapse of the Key Bridge. Governor Moore joins me on the other side of a quick break. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WIPR.